Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started with our next session. I really think we have four very interesting papers. In one way, they're very different, but another way, they're very complementary in the kind of material we're going to talk about. And I'm going to try and get these names right, but it's a little bit challenging for me. But the first one is, the title of the paper is The Unexamined Life of Public Health by Dr. David Sabathpathy. Close enough? Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you for coming to this talk this afternoon. I am a Canadian physician and medical officer of health, and I work in the smallest of Canada's 10 provinces, pictured here with its beautiful red cliffs. It's Prince Edward Island, or PEI. And PEI is found on the east coast of Canada. It's a land of picturesque coastline, quaint towns, and scenic countryside. And even though PEI has only 150,000 people, we find the same public health situation in PEI as we do in Canada and around the globe. Now, as a medical officer of health, my specialty is public health. And right away, we need to make a distinction between public health and public health care, or clinical medicine. You see, health care cares for people who are sick through means of hospitals, clinicians, and medications, whereas public health operates outside the healthcare system to keep people healthy and prevent disease and injury before it occurs. So public health focuses on populations versus individuals and prevention rather than treatment. Now, many years ago, a definition of public health was provided by the medical officer of health, Sir Donald Acheson in the UK. He called it the science and art of preventing disease, prolonging life, and promoting health through the organized efforts of society. And there's three elements here: public health as a science, public health as an art, which we'll call ethics, and public health as the organized efforts of society, which we'll call leadership. And today, we're going to examine public health around the world using the Global Burden of Disease Study. It's a comprehensive research program with over 1,800 researchers collecting mortality and disability data on 249 causes in 195 countries. And they now have trend data going back to 1980. And today, I'm going to make a radical claim that public health practice is deeply rooted in a Christian perspective of the world. Specifically, public health science, ethics, and leadership all rely on beliefs about the world in which we live. And these beliefs, though rarely examined, draw on a foundation provided by a Christian worldview. And by a Christian worldview, I mean what is universally accepted by all Christian traditions. It's found in Scripture, the historical Judeo-Christian record, and common creedal statements of faith shared by Christians around the world. And with that understanding, we can begin by examining the relationship between Christianity and public health science. Now, the scope of public health science is diverse. There's many sciences: microbiology, the environmental sciences, the behavioral sciences, and epidemiology, the basic science of public health. And it's the study of the patterns and causes of disease in a population. And the GBD study is a prime example of epidemiology in action. To set the context for this study, there's five global trends occurring in health right now around the world. Populations are growing, but they're also aging. We're moving into cities, which is putting pressure on environmental sustainability, a prerequisite for good health. And the world is shifting from a world of communicable disease like HIV and TB to a world of chronic disease like cancer and cardiovascular disease. And finally, at least for us here in Canada, public health care isn't really sustainable due to these pressures. So we begin our look at the GBD study by looking at the three categories of disease in the world. And we find that communicable disease has decreased from a proportion of about 50% earlier in the century to now only about 20%. We are now dominated by non-communicable or chronic disease, which accounts for 70% of all mortality. But the good news is this: over the past 35 years, life expectancy has increased around the world from 62 years in 1980 to 72 years in 2015. And this gain has occurred around the world, in all countries. And it continues a trend that has been going on for some time. If we take the GBD study and link it to some other studies, we can see that this has been going on for almost a century. Life expectancy has increased by over 30 years since the 1900s. It's a remarkable feat. And so what do we have to attribute to this achievement? Surprising to some, it's not due to our healthcare systems. You see, since the 1970s, there's an overwhelming evidence base that these systems only account for a small proportion of population health. Rather, public health science, ethics, and leadership have together contributed to the great public health achievements of the past century pictured here. It's a fantastic story, and there's an optimism that as we continue into the 21st century, we can continue to improve health in the world. After all, look at the expanding capabilities of science and technology as it identifies cause and effect relationships, such as that between HPV and cervical cancer. Develop public health interventions, such as the new malaria vaccines on the horizon, and elevate standards of living around the world, which, as we'll see, are strongly connected to health. But the question is, where does this hope really come from? Is it based on humanity alone? And the answer must be no, for reasons that we'll see repeated throughout this conference. You see, epidemiology relies on this basic assumption. Diseases don't distribute randomly, but in relation to their causes. Foodborne illness is more likely in areas with poor sanitation. But of course, this assumption is based on a belief that our world operates with regularity and predictability. We expect to see patterns of disease arranged according to a pattern of causes, and we can use these patterns to predict and prevent future cases of disease. But where does this order come from? Is it unplanned or intentional? And on a Christian worldview, the universe was created by and is dependent on God as a necessary condition for its existence. Order is discovered in nature and codified in laws. Therefore, the universe is predictable, capable of being explored. And this makes epidemiology, the GBD study, and all science possible. But of course, gathering empirical health data about millions of people around the globe is very difficult. It's time-consuming, it's expensive. So in epidemiology, we take samples, and we infer general conclusions. But inductive reasoning itself is based on a belief, our ability to reason in this ordered world. And where does this capacity to reason come from? Is it again from non-rational, unguided processes? We must return again to a Christian worldview. We are made in God's image. We have the capacity to reason. And this assertion provides the foundation for epidemiology and all public health science. So we may conclude that public health science, the global improvements in health over the past century are due to science and technology, but public health science is not based on humanity alone. It relies on our ability to reason in an ordered world, and these beliefs are supported by a Christian worldview. Now, at this point, some of you may say, well, this view may be relative to theism, but not exclusive to Christianity. And I would agree with you, and ask that you bear with me as we turn to public health ethics. Because as we'll see, public health science is not the only story. Public health also relies on moral imperatives. And recall that Sir Donald Acheson described public health as an art. And we mean here not only creativity, but looking at health from the aspect of value. You see, public health is in the business of translating scientific knowledge into societal action. And this involves ethical decision-making about what is morally right or wrong to pursue. This is especially true when we speak of those non-communicable or chronic diseases listed here, because these are strongly related to human behavior. Well, what proportion of these diseases are related to human behavior? Well, when we look at cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and lung disease, we find that over two-thirds of them are related to tobacco, alcohol, poor diet, and physical inactivity. When we go back to the GBD study and look at some of the disease outcomes, we see increases of lung cancer around the world, strongly related to tobacco smoking. Liver disease, again, related to alcohol use. Over 10 million cases of diabetes and heart disease related to unhealthy diet and poor physical activity. So, in public health, there's a moral imperative to improve these health conditions. Public health recognizes health as a fundamental human right. And this relies on a moral understanding of the intrinsic value of human beings. All people are valued regardless of their life circumstances or their choices. And where does this concept come from, intrinsic human value? If it is only a social convention, then health may not always be a human right. But this is at odds with public health's timeless vision of human health. Rather, to find a basis for intrinsic human value, we need to borrow again from a Christian worldview. On this view, the universe and all life was created by God for a purpose, so all of creation is inherently valuable. Moral values, like intrinsic human value, are facts originating from God's nature. And it's this Christian worldview that provides a foundation for public health's calling to improve health. Returning to the GBD study, we have to ask the question that I get asked perhaps the most often: why don't people change their behavior? And for the answer, we look at the study. The study plots health outcomes by sociodemographic index, or SDI. It's an index using three indicators to capture the socioeconomic status of countries: average income, educational attainment, and total fertility rate, which is strongly correlated to both income and education. And as we look around the world, we see the lower SDI countries in red and orange, mostly African nations. The middle SDI countries are in yellow, clustered in South and Central America, Africa, and Asia. And the higher SDI countries are in blue, where we expect to see them. We can now plot on the horizontal axis SDI versus life expectancy on the vertical axis. And we see as SDI increases, life expectancy increases, and dramatically so. An SDI of 0.25 is related to a life expectancy of 55 years. An SDI of 0.75 has a life expectancy of over 70 years. So, though overall life expectancy in the world is increasing, life expectancy varies widely based on socioeconomic status. All of this reinforces the evidence that we have that the greatest factors which determine health are the social, economic, and environmental conditions in which people live. Things such as poverty, illiteracy, and homelessness. So it's one thing to improve health on average in the world, but what if we improve health a lot for a few and very little for the rest? In public health, we speak of health inequity. Differences in health outcomes among population groups that are systemic and avoidable. Systemic, because health is influenced by social, economic, and environmental conditions. And avoidable, because typically it's political and social forces that establish these living conditions. And inevitably, they favor those with power, wealth, and prestige. For this reason, public health believes in the principle of distributive justice. So societal resources should be distributed fairly in a way that provides all people with an opportunity for good health. But where does this concept of distributive justice come from? Some would say it's social environmental conditioning. It helped us survive, but helped who survive? If social groups define what is just, then justice can simply favor those with power, wealth, and prestige. Rather, we need an objective, unwavering concept of justice to insist on health for all. So we return to the grounding of a Christian worldview. Distributed justice follows from intrinsic human value. If all people are equally treasured, then all people should have the same opportunity for good health. And second, if God is just in his nature, it gives a sense of why we have this idea of health justice so deeply ingrained in us. So, for public health ethics, it really relies on belief in moral imperatives, that we improve health not just for a few, but for everyone. And these imperatives assume the prerequisites of human value and justice. But aren't the health gains found in the GBD study due to moral progress? Well, I think this crowd knows here well that to propose moral progress implies an unchanging moral standard towards which we're progressing. And a Christian worldview provides a basis, a standard for those moral values and duties. First, it recognizes human value as a moral fact, and second, it imposes a moral duty on society to pursue health for all. Again, objective moral values and duties are perhaps exclusive to theism, not Christianity. And in the last section on public health leadership, we need to make those final connections. Because as we'll see, it's not enough to have moral imperatives. Public health leadership depends on applying these principles to public health practice. Leadership in public health starts with a firm belief in the purpose of human life. This understanding is reflected in the popular portrayal of health as a resource for everyday life, not the objective of living. According to the WHO, health is not an end in itself, but a way of enabling people to achieve their purpose. The global campaign to eradicate polio has saved 13 million children from paralysis, and there's profound meaning in this effort because each child's life has purpose. Following our pattern of leadership, of exploration, we must ask, where does this purpose come from? Public health science and even ethics is of little value here. Even if an entire sequence of causes for human life could be formulated, the question would still remain, does such a sequence have purpose? Rather, the purpose relied on in public health practice every day refers to a profound meaning whose source lies outside the natural world. Our earlier observations, order, reason, intrinsic human value, distributive justice, they all lead to the inference that human life has a purpose. And on a Christian worldview, that purpose is found in relationship with God. But no sooner do we affirm purpose in human life than we are confronted with the startling fact that we as society consistently fail to pursue health for all. The WHO tells us that around the world, it's the poor and disempowered that have the highest rates of illness, disability, and premature death. These findings are largely attributed to poor living conditions. 40% of the world live on less than $2 per day. 1 billion live in hunger, and 1 billion live in slums. As a result, the WHO concludes that social injustice is killing people on a grand scale. Moral accountability for health at this level cannot simply be deferred to society, but begins with us all as individuals. So it's at this point that we have to bring things back from the global to the local, and then the personal. Returning to PEI, we find that the lowest income islanders have the greatest behavioral risk factors for chronic disease. Higher rates of daily smoking, heavy drinking, physical inactivity, and fruit and vegetable intake, or lower rates of fruit and vegetable intake. And these are all statistically significant. It's not surprising then that the lowest income islanders suffer from the highest rates of the following chronic diseases. And what we conclude is health inequity exists around the world, but also on our small island too. But there's something funny here. As we go from the global to the local and then the personal, everyone agrees that health injustice must be accounted for, but individual accountability is surprisingly hard to find. Despite vast evidence linking human choices to health injustice around the world, there's an odd incongruity. Most of us consider ourselves to be virtuous. Fault always lies elsewhere. So we must make that final step from the local back to the personal. And we think, if you could join me for a moment, of a poor child coming home from school with a few dollars in their pocket. Parents aren't home because they're working shift work and there's no food in the fridge. They walk home through a neighborhood full of unhealthy food choices. And then we ask this child to make a healthy choice. But we know where that money will be spent time and time again, and we know the health impact that awaits this child down the road. A Christian worldview provides a framework for understanding our moral shortcomings in relation to public health. We are made in God's image, we have the ability to reason, and there's voluntary action. We have the ability to help that child. And when we use these capacities to advance public health moral imperatives, real progress has been achieved, such as increased access to clean drinking water around the world. Unfortunately, we've also seen the opposite, the neglect of our moral duty, such as global marketing to tobacco for children, leading to many today still starting to smoke before the age of 10. It's the undeniable fact of human existence. We're relentlessly in conflict with ourselves, often failing to do what we know we ought to do. Christian worldview explains why society simultaneously calls for health justice, but often finds disinterest and self-concern instead. So we return one last time to a Christian worldview, which provides a foundation for the hope of public health. We each have accountability for health in the world. We are called to advocate for better living conditions for all people, to help that child increase control over and to improve their health. For us who recognize this individual accountability, it's a solemn charge. We long to change ourselves and society, to see justice and compassion in the world. And it's here that the Christian message, the good news, presents us with the hope of reconciliation. In addition to providing the foundations of scientific and ethical thought in public health, the good news of the Christian worldview is this. Through Christ's work on the cross, we all have purpose and there is hope. Christ presents us with a choice to acknowledge our shortcomings, to tap into our unique purpose and hope, and to be transformed. In summary, since the central challenge of public health is our moral shortcomings, the hope of public health is found in moral reconciliation with God and our fellow human beings. Global public health begins with Christ and the individual, and it's from this personal beginning that the notions of optimism and progress in public health are founded. Thank you. Is the correlation between SDI and, I didn't hear the second part of that.
Brain drain. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not part of the study, so it's not something I could comment on, but I do appreciate what you're, where you're getting at there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for that. Usually when you think of public health, you think of kind of, you know, disease prevention and epidemiology. Is there an explicit effort to go at public health from the angle of social justice, or is it mainly kind of relegated to the medical side, or is it the umbrella wide enough to explicitly include that?
Yeah, absolutely, it is wide enough, and I think that has really been the push, if I can say, over the past, I'd say, 50 years or so, really to get at those social issues. And one of the things we're finding in health, when I talk about the unsustainability of the healthcare system, is we can no longer afford to keep treating people. A lot of these chronic diseases, they just progress. It's not something you can cure. You can only treat the symptoms, so it's not sustainable. And so you have to look at addressing that behavior, and that gets you right back to the social causes. So it's been a big push of public health now for quite some time to start working outside of the health sector to try and influence those social determinants of health so that we can offload the downstream effects. Thank you.
What is the role of education for children, especially in schools? Years ago, there used to be home economics classes where kids were learning how to eat healthy and cook and things like that. And that's all sort of gone away. And I wonder how many, if there's a new push for that, or there should be, let's put it that way. There used to be cooperative extension classes, and you don't see that anymore. And I wonder if that's a method of at least getting to deal with the nutrition and healthy.
Well, I'll take it from two ends of the spectrum. From the international lens, the WHO has a big focus now on health literacy. That's one of their pillars that they're following. The other is around healthy cities. So that is absolutely something that they would be very interested in kind of promoting that at the global level. And if that's too abstract, in Prince Edward Island, we have the same kind of push as well. We're trying to get into the school system and trying to revive some of those types of activities that you've been talking about. So absolutely, it is definitely a focus of public health right now.
Gentlemen here. Thank you for summarizing public health. In the U.S., I think we have a highly individualized approach, and it's hard to get people to want to give funds toward public goods, because that money is going to go toward people who have bad lifestyles, like the poor individuals on the island you described. How, as Christians, do we stand up for vulnerable populations when our taxes and our general, you know, general taxes will go to sort of support the health issues of people who are, in their minds, making bad choices, but I think we would argue are in some ways victims of environmental factors that are out of their control. How, as Christians, how do we strike that balance and get that message out?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, we could talk about this for quite some time. Maybe afterwards we can get together. But I think the Christian worldview is really in great in the sense that it does provide that balance. I mean, we recognize that the final common pathway is individual choice. And thank goodness in the free countries in which we live here. But we also recognize that those choices are heavily influenced by our environment. And so it's that playing with that tension back and forth that is the power of the Christian worldview. And I think, you know, and really, how do we encourage that discussion or show that these social factors are really playing a big role? Well, I think the whole advent of chronic disease is just making it so much easier for us now. I have power under the Public Health Act to act on communicable disease. If I saw an outbreak occurring, I could, you know, quarantine people. We don't have powers for chronic disease, but we're going to have to start advocating as a population that we change our legislation to have those powers. Because I can predict in certain neighborhoods that the smoking rate is going to be this, and that 30 years later that lung cancer rate is going to be something. But you don't change legislation without popular endorsement of people. So it's a long road.
I think we have time for just one more question.
So I did appreciate the presentation, and one thing I noticed is the categories that you presented. Mm-hmm. One thing that seems to be missing is illicit drug use, and I'm just wondering, it's become almost epidemic here in Massachusetts, so I'm wondering if you could speak to that, and that also has a major effect on Chicago.
Absolutely. Yeah, for them, just the way they categorize diseases, it falls under non-communicable disease, so it's just in its own category under that. But it's interesting, when you look at global mortality, a lot of the trends are down. That's why life expectancy is going up. Mortality rates are down across the board, but not so for illicit drugs, including opioid use, cannabis, depending. Of course, you've probably heard that we're legalizing in Canada, that as well. So illicit drugs is a huge problem. It falls into the same category. It's a risk factor for chronic disease, and also can be directly related to disability, illness, death, and disability. So I guess I agree with you that it's a huge public health issue, and it's growing.
Thank you very much.